This is SQPN, the StarQuest Production Network, leading the way.
This episode of The Secrets of Once Upon a Time is brought to you by Bluehost. It is my favorite hosting provider for blogs or websites because it's affordable, $6.95 per month. If you sign up for a year, you get your .com domain name included in the price. And what I find even more important, it is super simple to set up your blog. It's basically just one push of a button and they take care of the rest. So highly recommend it. Check it out at sqpn.com/Bluehost. And this show is also brought to you by my book, Geek Priest, Confessions of a New Media Pioneer, with, yes, fairy tales in it, as well as Star Wars and many other geek-related stuff. That's hence the title, Geek Priest. I'm a priest and I'm a geek, so seem to be an obvious title. If you want to find out more about that book or you want to order it, just go to sqpn.com/geekpriest. And with that, let's start the show.
Any particular reason she would send a demon who looks like you?
No idea. I was just there, wearing my face, harping on my deepest fears.
It knew your deepest fears?
Yeah, things I never told anyone, even Mary Margaret. It wasn't until I admitted them that I was able to defeat it by stabbing it with the hilt of my sword.
Where is it? Your sword?
Well, that's the strange part. After I killed it, the hilt, it disappeared.
Well, what's that mean, then?
When we face our deepest fears, our true courage comes out. When you use the hilt of your sword to vanquish your fears, your courage transferred into it.
And why did it disappear?
It didn't disappear. She took it.
And welcome back to another episode of Secrets of Once Upon a Time, the show where we talk about, well, in this case, the third season, the second half of the third season of the TV series Once Upon a Time, where fairy tales are put upside down, shaken a bit, and we witness what falls out. Joining me today, two of our panel members, Shelley, who has been here all along since the beginning of this season. Hi, Shelley.
Hello, Father.
And also joining back from where, actually? From the Enchanted Forest, Deborah. Hey, Deborah.
I bet you all thought I was turned into a flying monkey.
But no, of course not. We were just imagining that you were learning to dance somewhere in a faraway castle in Disney World, or who knows. It's good to have you back. We record on Tuesday, and then you're unable to join us. But today we're recording on a Thursday, so we're happy to have you back on the show as our Disney expert. And also, of course, you have been engaged in this show for 2.5 seasons now, and we are dying to hear what you think of the storylines. So today we're going to talk about, actually I'm not sure what the title was of this episode.
The Tower.
The Tower. Well, there you go. It's the Rapunzel story. We hadn't seen that fairy tale yet. And, let me just ask the question I always ask at the beginning of the show. What's your general assessment of this episode? Deborah, let me start with you.
I would, if I had to score it 1 to 10, it would probably be 6.5. Mm-hmm. I think the episode prior to this was better, but there were certain things that I was watching that I'm like, oh, hey, you know, I can see the Oz characteristics coming out in the characters. And I'm like, oh, well, you know, I have a few questions about who's going to be whom, but I already have like two of the characters kind of
really
down.
Oh, interesting. Yes. I'd love to hear more about that later on.
So that kind of excites me.
Huh.
You know,
cool.
Yeah.
And no sharks in this episode either. So
no sharks.
They couldn't jump the sharks either.
Well, you know, I know I'd been kind of lamenting, and I'd been thinking about this for the last couple weeks, is like, has the show jumped the shark?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when they came back with a second curse, I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Really? And I'm like, this is lame, because all of a sudden it was way too easy. And so I was kind of skeptical coming into the second half of the season, like, all right, what are we going to do now? But so far, I'm hanging in there. One of the things that I guess disappoints me a little bit more is there's not as much Disney. There's not a lot of Disney things hidden anymore. And I'm always on the lookout for that, and I haven't seen a lot.
Hmm.
And in this episode, maybe I saw maybe one or two things that could vaguely be like, you know, hidden Easter egg kind of things. But for the most part, it seems to be clean of that kind of stuff. And that's the stuff I actually did like.
You're right. The show seems to be much less filled with things going on in the background. It doesn't really leave as much room to speculate or to guess, except for the general storyline. But I remember the first season, we were constantly freeze-framing because we were looking at all the objects in the background, and sometimes they would come back. And you kind of miss that extra dimension of the show, like the hidden Mickeys in a way.
Yeah.
I agree. What about you, Shelley?
You know, okay, so 1 to 10, not ABC. I'm going to go with a 7. Mm-hmm. It wasn't so much the story itself. It wasn't the Rapunzel story and David and his fears of failing that I liked. I liked that's the micro view. I liked the macro view. I like where they're going with this season. I am looking at the overarching story. I saw at least three things, Deborah, that to me just scream Hidden Mickey. So when we get into that segment, I'm interested to see which, if we're looking at the same things mm-hmm. or if we're looking at different things. But my husband has called me just a complete total nerd because I'm looking at things like what Zelina's wearing.
Oh, really?
And
oh,
yeah. Seeing I'm identifying that with the fashion and of the movies. And just like, he says, you are the only person I know in the world that knows what is sitting there trying to figure out if it's 1900 or 1910 influence, American or English. And I'm like, but. So
I'm so glad to have the both of you here on the panel, because that's the kind of stuff that I don't even realize is there. So I'd love to hear more about that. I would give this episode a 7 out of 10, but I would give it a big 8 for the way in which it was filmed. I had the feeling that this episode, I'm not sure who directed it, but it had a very distinct style. It almost felt like a thriller. It made me think, and perhaps also because of the snow and the cold, of Fargo. I'm not sure if you've seen that movie.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that.
It had kind of a... I don't know. Everything felt a bit remote and kind of quiet, but there was also a menace in it. It was very atypical, I thought, for an episode of Once Upon a Time. And I thought the camera work was really good, especially the moments where what we think is the Wicked Witch is hiding behind the trees, and then all these kind of scary exorcist-like effects. I thought it was very well executed, and they definitely went the extra mile, I think, in terms of cinematography, which is something that I've sometimes really felt was missing from the show, just the quality. I felt that they were just rushing through the stories and not investing enough in the way it was filmed. And well, you've heard me complaining about the special effects. I was actually glad that there were hardly any special effects here or virtual castles. I mean, we saw the castle of Rapunzel's parents, but it didn't scream like, oh gosh, obvious fake to me like previous episodes. And so kudos to the director for that, and for the cameraman. That was very well done. And there were some interesting aspects of the story, although it was very much one theme. It was all about fear and facing your fear. And so for Inge, who is not here today, it was pretty easy to find a good little sound clip for the beginning of the show, because the entire show was about the same theme. So she had a lot of possibilities there. I mean, it's an important theme, and the way they talked about it was kind of okay, but I was hoping for a bit more.
Okay, Father, I'll give you the more.
Okay.
it was a theme that was driven. It was there for a purpose, and that purpose is exactly what Inga put in the first clip for you. It's the courage. She took courage. She took Charming's courage. Wizard of Oz, what are the three gifts of the wizard?
Courage and heart and brain. And guess what? Huh. We have... So now David is our cowardly lion.
Oh, I
well,
see.
And we also, because they took it, he has to get it back.
Mm-hmm. Is that what you're thinking? Guess who? We also have a scarecrow. You know who our scarecrow is?
No idea.
Oh, Rumpelstiltskin.
Yes, it is.
Oh, because he lost his mind.
Yes.
And she says that. I think the spinning is making you mad, and I need you presentable.
And my theory is for the Tin Men is that Emma's the Tin Men because she has her heart broken.
Oh, of course. Of course. Hence the little dialogue in the woods with Hook.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Wow, and so that is smart.
And we have a good witch, and you would be surprised who our good witch is.
Regina?
Yep.
Uh-huh.
The sister. So,
yep.
And this is just here's a little hidden Easter egg kind of thing for you, Deborah. Did you notice that for courage, they used the broken hilt of his sword?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, go back and do a Google image search of the big, huge cross that in the movie Wizard of Oz he puts on the Cowardly Lion at the end. It looks like the hilt of a sword.
Oh,
oh
really?
No way. I totally missed that. That's awesome.
Cool.
Bum, bum, bum.
Oh, wow. Well,
and, you know, I had kind of a working knowledge of Wicked, of the novel Wicked, and I kind of have a every kid's knowledge of Wizard of Oz. So, and then some other like Wizard of Oz related stuff. So I'm kind of like looking for the Oz stuff now, and I'm like, okay, there's a little bit of Wicked in here. There's a little bit of I'm still trying to figure out where they're pulling their story from.
I'm so glad to hear that you know the story Wicked, because I have not read the book. I confess, I tried once. I got like 3 pages in and couldn't do it. And I've never seen the musical or the stage production, so I have no knowledge of that. Father Roderick's read The Wizard of Oz, the original version, which I read so long ago I couldn't tell you how it changed because I grew up on the movie. You watched The Wizard of Oz every year on either Good Friday or Easter weekend, whatever it was that channel used to, before this pre-cable and pre-movie rentals.
I thought it was a Thanksgiving tradition, or...
No, I'm pretty sure it was in the spring.
Okay.
In America, at least. We were in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
It was only once a year. Huh. And you watched it every... Because my husband grew up on the Ten Commandments movie, and I grew up on The Wizard of Oz, and usually they ran on opposite channels.
I know which one I would choose. The Wizard of Oz. I actually never saw the movie as a child. I just knew the book. I wasn't even aware that there was a movie. And then when I saw the movie much later as a student, I really disliked it because it was so different from my imagination. And I thought it was kind of cheesy and looked so old-fashioned. And it was old-fashioned. The only thing that I liked was how they that wasn't as clear as in the book. Basically, the characters and the events in the world of Oz mirror certain characters and people in the real world. So Oz became much more of a kind of a metaphor world for Dorothy, and that's something I did not see or didn't remember from the book. But I don't know. I never really warmed up to the movie. I still am not. It's not one of my. Not, it's not a movie I like watching. I did like the sequel, strangely enough, which many people did not like at all.
There was a sequel?
Well, yeah, the movie 2 years ago. It was just Oz, I think. What was it?
Oh, The Great and Mighty Oz, movie?
The recent one.
Yeah.
Oh, I need to go watch that. My daughters have been trying to get me to watch that one.
Yeah,
and I just haven't seen it. The one with the little China doll.
Yeah, I thought it was really, really charming and great. And they didn't have. I think they didn't. There was a problem with the rights, so they had to steer away from certain elements. Mm-hmm. And I think they don't have the rights to. It's a different company that owns the original movie.
And MGM owns the original Wizard of Oz.
There you go.
So Disney and MGM used to be really friendly because remember, Disney Hollywood Studios used to be Disney MGM Studios.
Oh, of course.
And so they had, but they, they kind of in the last 10 years have been kind of growing apart from MGM.
Uh-huh.
So I imagine that MGM was like, well, we'll let you do this, but don't do that.
Mm-hmm. So they visually had to go in a totally different direction from the movie. I thought they did it in a very clever way. And it still felt very much like, Oz. And, of course, this movie is done with all the modern wizardry that is available now to movie makers, and I thought it looked glorious. And they did maintain that, you know, going from black and white 4x3 frame, and then the moment you enter Oz, I remember my jaw dropping. It was so beautiful. All of a sudden, the screen, everything becomes colored, and you get that widescreen effect. It was as if your brain was open to the world of Oz. It was magical. And yeah, I've never watched it again, but I really liked it. But anyway, that's not here or there. So what were we talking about? How did we get to this?
The courage, the movie, and the lion.
One thing I was expecting, and I think it was we got a glimpse of that in the trailer for this episode last week, was I was hoping to see the Yellow Brick Road.
And
I didn't see it. But in the trailer, they showed kind of this, I think it was the Wicked Witch walking, and then behind her, the road just turned into the Yellow Brick Road. It was just a fragment of a second, so perhaps it's something that is taken from a future episode. But I was just dying to see that Yellow Brick Road.
Well, we did get to see Rumple spinning gold.
Oh, true.
Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if he was spinning the gold for her, but why? I mean, the whole mm-hmm. Rumple thing has just got me. I love it.
I love that he's working with straw as well. If he's supposed to be the scarecrow, that is so fitting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So was the spinning wheel in the cell with him because, A, they needed the straw to, you know, start hinting at the scarecrow. B, she wants the gold for, I don't know, a reason to build a yellow road, a golden road. Or is it just so that at the end of this episode, when our team of heroes finds the storm cellar and goes down in, they know that Rumple either was there or is there.
Yeah.
Has somehow survived.
The fact that the spinning wheel is still there, I think, is an indication that Zelina wants them to find it. Wants them to know that that Rumple is still alive. And so I'm thinking of a trap. She's clearly manipulating everyone and everything.
And they left it very open by having the lock being broken. It wasn't busted the first time they show up.
Oh, good point.
And then when they come back, they say, oh, that lock wasn't busted before.
Well, and it's busted, so it's probably not Zelina who broke it
open. But it's also busted on the outside of the door.
Yes, so?
So somebody from the outside of the cellar had to bust the lock, unless Rump used magic to bust it from the inside. So I'm wondering if there's a way that somebody busted it from the outside.
Could it be that Zelina has an enemy that we don't know of, and that there's an enemy trying to go against her plans?
Well, okay, so there used to be four witches, right?
Yes.
And the original Wizard of Oz. There's, you know, the Good Witch, there's a Wicked Witch of the East, the Wicked Witch of the West. You know, basically they were all four directions.
Yeah.
So, let's see. Zelina would be the Wicked Witch of the West, right?
Uh-huh.
So maybe there's a couple other witches. You're right. There might be a couple other witches somewhere else.
So there could be another revelation, another character entering the show a little bit later.
Possibly.
Could be.
Deborah, is there any familial relationship in the book or the musical Wicked between the witches?
Yes. Wicked, the Green Witch in the book, and this is the whole plot line of Wicked, and from my remember, I mean, this has been years since I've kind of, you know, had any indication of this, and I haven't seen the musical, so I'm just going on what somebody, you know, what I've read about the plot line, in a sense, which is that the Wicked Witch, and I can't even remember her name in the book, with the green skin, had a sister, is the one that you see killed by the house in the original Wizard of Oz. But that witch was a good witch, in a sense. And she was spoiled, and she was pampered by her parents, but she was also wheelchair bound.
Oh, wow.
So when Dorothy comes in and kills her sister, you know, then it's like, that's when the Wicked Witch kind of goes off and exacts revenge, but it's more just against Dorothy because, you know, Dorothy killed her sister. How dare you kill my sister?
Hmm.
You know, it's more, you know, it's more understandable, more sympathetic towards the Wicked Witch and how, why she's perceived as wicked. Because she goes against, the wizard, in the book, mm-hmm. and goes against that and becomes an outcast to society. And then she steals Glinda's boyfriend and, you know, it's kind of weird, but, and then instead of melting into the puddle, which you see at the regular Wizard of Oz, that's just a ploy. She actually runs off with her boyfriend, who is the Good Witch's boyfriend. So they can be happy. But yeah, so in the book, yeah, the sisters are, they're definitely a relation there.
So there might, well, there, so there could be a relative who's involved in this and yeah. Could be a, perhaps a good family member who
but tries... Glinda in the book was, Glinda was not related to
Wait a minute.
She was. They were college roommates or school roommates, kind of like Hogwarts, only for witches.
Okay, it suddenly struck me. You know what? We have, this is like a mathematical equation. We have a person X who broke the lock and took out Rumpelstiltskin. Who is that missing person? And is there perhaps in the story another person that is missing? And we know who that is. Neil.
We do still have a Togo. Character missing here.
Exactly. Neil. Neil is gone. We don't know where he is. Some people think he's turned into a monkey. What if he is the one who has freed his father?
I think it'd be better if Neil was a monkey that remembered he's really Neil and is working like a double agent.
That would be cool too. But now that I think of it, that makes total sense that it's Neil. And we don't, of course, know what happened to him in that lost year. But it kind of makes sense that he's, you know, when he discovers that his father is alive, he's, of course, going to try to liberate him.
There's a question, and I thought about this, too. This is what I've been thinking about the last. But apparently, you know, who is going to end up as Dorothy? Well, the whole point of Dorothy is she's like an innocent. She has no real abilities other than she's a friendly person.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking it's Henry.
I think that's what I thought too. It's Henry. It must be Henry.
It would be the right mashup.
Who's going to be the dog? Toto.
Well, yeah.
Pogo.
Pogo
back, right?
Perhaps. Yeah, perhaps Regina will buy him a dog. I don't know. But yeah, but I totally didn't realize this while watching the episode, but it's so clear that they're like steering everything into the direction of, you know, all the characters in Oz. It's
okay. I've got one for Deborah. Mm-hmm. Deborah, what was on the porch?
Which porch?
Which porch? Yeah, at the farmhouse.
When Hook and Emma are approaching the farmhouse and they're walking around the farmhouse, what was on the porch?
I missed that.
I've not seen anything.
Oh my gosh.
What was there?
The bicycle with the basket.
Oh, from the Wizard of Oz. From the,
yes.
Oh, she sees
Margaret
the witch.
Hamilton. Margaret, yes. Hamilton riding the, yes. Yes. There's the bicycle. It's right there on the edge of the farmhouse.
Okay.
And the whole inside of the farmhouse, uh-huh. It's not modern. The inside of the farmhouse is very early 19th century or late 18th century.
Wow.
Late 19th century, early 20th century Americana.
So it's very Kansas, is what you're saying.
Yes.
Wow.
Well, and that's what really kind of threw me off about the farmhouse is like, why is there a farmhouse in the middle of, you know, this forest?
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's very Midwestern. You're right. It's a very Midwestern looking farmhouse.
Almost like a tornado just sort of dropped it right there in the middle, huh?
Exactly.
Like a curse.
Wow.
Oh, speaking of, how many people want to project that?
Hold on. And it was a storm cellar.
Yes.
So, yeah.
It's a tornado shelter.
Oh, yeah. My God. Oh, man. That was right in my face and I didn't see it. How cool.
So, how many people want to say, and this is total speculation, but if there's a season 4, you know, season 2 ended with them having to go through a portal to Neverland. What if, and if there's a season 4, end of season 3 ends with a tornado that's a portal and takes everybody to the Wizard of Oz.
Oh, or to sweet. The Oz.
Oh, that would be so cool. And we get to have And that would that would actually show us the yellow brick road.
There you've got your traveling, and then you'd have Dorothy, so Henry, cool. and the three characters, which we're projecting are Emma,
Rumple, and
right, and off they go down the yellow brick road with probably other people with them because it's an ensemble cast.
Awesome. And but what who would be the Wizard of Oz, the man behind the curtain?
Oh. Hmm.
Don't know. And how does the baby fit into all of this? So I don't know. It's had our family just speculating.
Wait a minute. Could the Wizard of Oz be the father of Zelina? And somehow manipulating everything.
I thought the father of Zelina was Rumple. Was the last speculation you had last week,
wait,
right?
Yeah.
What if it's the adopted father that she doesn't know isn't her father?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because she did interact with Rumple in a way that I don't think she knows he's her father. And she spoke about her father always being in the drink, his hand shook from drink or worse.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, yeah. I was very confused by that scene, the shaving scene. It's like, first of all, it looks very creepy with the dagger and using that to shave someone without, you know, shaving cream or anything. I was like, there's bound to be some blood because there always is in a shaving scene. It's a trope in any movie, any television series. Whenever someone shaves, especially slowly, there is going to be a cut, and the cut is symbolic for something.
But she needed it.
Did she?
She knew she needed the blood.
Oh, why?
Yep, for a spell or a curse.
The blood lock. She had to open the blood lock to get the night root to give to. So she shaved him on purpose. She shaved him, that whole appearances thing. It was just to tell us about her father and to say that if Rumple's her father, she doesn't know about her father. And to show us that she has the dagger. She has how many times in season one? And did we say, oh, what if Regina gets the dagger?
Mm-hmm.
And now Zelina has it. She controls the dark one. And then she needed the blood just to go and, look, we've nicked you.
And it's pretty cool because, I mean, look at all the symbolism there. She now has the dagger. So Rumple is her slave or slave to the dagger and to the one who owns the dagger, which means he cannot think for himself anymore. So she literally took away his free will, his intellect, and the only thing he can do is just obey, and then he's in a cage. So that's another symbol of that, you know, being unfree, and she is fully in control. And
Scarecrow was on that beam. He couldn't get down. He couldn't shift, and Dorothy released him.
So the question is, of course, who is going to save Rumpelstiltskin? In the story, the original story, of course, they save themselves, and the Wizard of Oz is just kind of their projection. I mean, it's a real guy, but he's not a wizard. He's just, you know, a pretty inventive, creative guy who tricks everyone into believing that he's a wizard. But he's actually very afraid of the witches because he knows that the witches all have true witch power, which he hasn't got. So he needs to just use his tricks. And when the Scarecrow and Tin Man and the lion all get what they were searching for, basically the reveal is, well, you know, you had it all along, and it's the road to Oz gave you back your courage and your heart and your brain. So,
but it was self-awareness. It was just a totem, a symbol, which I think Regina made a comment at the end saying that symbols are very powerful.
Yes, exactly.
Totems, symbols
exactly.
are very powerful.
Very much in line with the original story of the Wizard of Oz, which also is very cool because the sword is taken away. The courage, it's just a symbol of the courage. But if David believes that it's truly his courage that has disappeared, he will lose that courage. But it also opens the story up to the possibility that he will find the courage without needing the sword.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, he had to face the fears
mm-hmm.
So it was kind of, it's almost like a twist. I mean, he had to face his fears, which he had all along. He had these fears, but he had the power to face them all along without any special power or magic. But when he did, because of the night root little potion she gave him, he lost his courage, transferred into an object that she then took that just happens to look like.
Yeah. Which was, by the way, perhaps for me, the weakest moment in the show, because it felt very contrived. It's like, come on, he's showing his courage. He is facing his fears. He does everything that he is supposed to do in such a situation. It's also what he recommends in fairy tale, in The Enchanted Forest, what he recommends Rapunzel to do, face your fears. And then as a result of that, he loses his courage. And because it goes into the sword, I was like, how does that make sense? It just
and
felt
that's why
bit...
I told you I gave the overall episode kind of the overarching look at the season was like, whoa.
I understand why they did it, because it just needed to be symbolized in a certain way. You want to prepare what's coming. And we now know that Rumple has lost his brain. David has lost his courage. So someone
Emma's lost her heart.
But it's not, is there a symbol of that heart?
It's not lost, it's broken.
It's broken.
Sure.
And Hook points out that, you know, at least you still feel, you know, at least you're still, you know, you have the opportunity to get it back.
Yeah.
So. Right. He says, don't take it the wrong way. I'm glad to hear your heart's broken, because if it can be broken, it means it still works. So... But my kids were thinking that Snow White and the baby would somehow play into the heart business.
I have an idea. Is that she's going to take the baby to Oz once it's born?
Who?
Yeah.
Zelina?
Zelina.
Oh.
Because, you know, why is she getting so close to Mary Margaret?
Of course. And that, of course. And then David, without his courage, couldn't come after her.
Right.
And why is she stealing the baby? She's so frustrated by everything she didn't have that now she wants to give it to that child? Is that
possibly? Could be like a Regina, and, you know, we saw her being very upset with her life, and what would save her is, you know, is Henry. Hmm. You know, what did save her? Henry. So could be.
Mike suggests in the chat room that it could also be Regina who loses her heart, because she has buried her heart. It's a good point.
She didn't bury it.
No?
She took it back up and put it back in. Okay. Remember, Snow stopped her.
Okay, you're right. You're right.
But again, Regina, because of the whole heart issue, I mean, so many people know how to pull hearts out. It's just...
It's crazy.
It's ridiculous.
It's a commodity. It's just, let me just take out this heart.
So... Now, I wanted to point out that Rumple did know that she was after something other than just shaving him for appearances. He said, what are you after? What exactly do you want? And she said, something that goes against your very nature.
Yeah.
And I don't want to... Something I can't wait.
And
I can't afford
I don't
to
wanna
wait
for. I don't want to wait for it. And then she goes and enchants Belle and steals the night
root. The night root, yeah.
But I was puzzled by that as well. What do you think she's searching for?
Oh.
Something that Rumple can't have?
Something that this is going to lead to. I mean, she's jealous of Regina. It's big, and that's what I love about this show.
And I'm thinking it must be something that's staring us in the face and we totally miss it. It's got to be something obvious. And it's probably, again, it's a symbolism here. It's something that Rumple can't get. Love?
Then somebody will give us some feedback.
Payback?
It could be, you know, his son's, you know, it could be as obvious as the whole Bay issue where it's like he's always been... after his son and his affections from a son, but I don't know.
She also told Rumple that, you know, her father used to say, no matter what we were feeling on the inside, we had to put on our best face. But no matter what we did, you and I, our outside showed exactly what was rotting on the inside.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. It's the first time I heard that in the Enchanted Forest. In that world, you cannot hide who you truly are, because it's and that's so true about fairy tales. Like if people are ugly, it's because there's something wrong with them. You're never just ugly and then have a good heart. Whereas in our world, it can totally be you can look great and be horrible, and you can look terribly ugly and be the most wonderful, beautiful person in the world.
And then when she talked about being in a land filled with opportunity, because of the other Wizard of Oz references, I kept thinking of the story of immigrants. America, especially at the turn of the 1900s, the turn into the 20th century, we were that beacon of hope for so many other countries that were sending so many immigrants. My family immigrated in the early 1900s from Italy. Mm-hmm. I just kept thinking, you know, the Willa Cather story.
My Antonia.
Yeah. My Antonia, thank you. All of that was just the whole history of the United States right there in 1900, because Wizard of Oz, the movie we know, is from 1939, but it was set in 1900. It was published in 1900, so it was written right there in that late 1890s.
Huh.
And it was supposed to be an allegory of the United States with, you know, the whole silver and gold issue on the money and William Jennings Bryan. There's more to it that some scholars will get into, but it's been 25 years since I've even thought about this.
Interesting.
My brain is feeling a little dull.
Well, it's not a very long read. we could just all read it again and then watch perhaps the recording of the musical Wicked and see the first sequel to Oz, which was Return to Oz. I've never seen that movie. It's from the '80s, isn't it?
Oh. Oh yeah. Well, how many times have they redone that movie? There's so many versions of it.
Yeah.
The Wiz.
We got the Wiz with Michael Jackson and isn't that sad? Like everybody's dead in that movie. It has some great songs.
So how many of you just really didn't like the whole Zelina talking to Mary Margaret and David and trusting them and you know she the first time I saw her in the scene with the apartment talking to Mary Margaret where David comes in, I thought, is she dressed like Mary Poppins on purpose?
Oh, you think so?
I found it to be a cross between Mary Poppins and the Margaret Hamilton Kansas character.
Yeah.
No, I mean, this is where I drove my husband crazy. Because I kept going, wait a minute, is it, you know, one movie is set in 1910 England and the other movie is set in 1900 America.
Mm-hmm.
And the high collar, the way it's open, the little vest, the pencil skirt.
It's on purpose, yeah.
The darts at the shoulder in her sleeve. All she was missing was the hat.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did they do that on purpose? Or are they just toying with me?
Yeah, I mean, Disney has a movie about Mary Poppins, so who knows?
Several.
Yeah. Several, really? Oh, gosh.
Well, they have, you know, they just had Saving Mr. Banks, which I watched a couple weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
I loved that.
I've not seen
it. It was not what I expected, but it was pretty good.
By the way, Return to Oz was a Walt Disney movie. So.
Yes.
I need to see that one. It's probably not very good. That's what I'm afraid
of. No, actually, I've heard a lot of people, it got pretty decent reviews here.
Oh, really? Wow.
Oh, wait. Maybe I'm thinking of something else. Okay, hold on. Too many Oz movies. Never mind.
It gets a 6.7 out of 10 from 16,305 users on IMDb. So it's probably not a very good movie, but watchable. I'll check it out and see if it's on Netflix. Let's get. There's one scene that we haven't talked about yet. And it's the scariest one, and the one they previewed us last week in the trailer, and it has all the freaky exorcist puppets turning their heads around. It's the whole nightmare that David has about losing Emma and failing as a father. And it was, I was really a bit surprised seeing Emma as a princess for the first time, I think, in the entire run of the series, that we see her at almost like a Disney princess.
She looks like Cinderella. She's dressed exactly like Cinderella.
I had a prom dress that same color.
But it can't be Cinderella because Cinderella was...
Because we already have Cinderella.
Well, yeah, she was in the story. But they definitely do kind of hint at that. And she has to go to a ball and learn how to dance. And
I wish so much that David could have been here today because I really, really wanted to hear his take on this as a new father, as someone whose daughter is under a year or right at a year old. Yeah. That I think every father could identify with that. I can't say for certain, but I know as a mother, you know, you worry that you're not going to be good enough or that you're going to fail in somehow or you're going to break them or damage them or not be able to give them what they need. And for me, this was a very real fear. And of course, he's already lost her. And Snow says it too when they're talking to Zelina about having to give her up, losing her.
Yeah.
You know, so that I thought was a nice nightmare. I was very, very glad that it was restricted just to the opening scene, that spinny, crazy thing.
It was very well done. And I thought, wow, they really invested in that because they rebuilt the whole set. They did the dancing, the dress. I mean, it was just pretty amazing.
And I scoured the shelves to see if there's... No, you know, seriously, I did scour the shelf for like Disney references.
Uh-huh.
Well,
I didn't
What about the 8-pointed sun in the window? I'm seeing a lot of 8-pointed suns. Yes, that's why I was asking. It had the same 8-pointed sun design on the floor, and the same 8-pointed design in a slightly more modern way is on the floor of the mayor's office. And I'm wondering if I've just missed it all these, you know, in the first season, or if it was there. And then, not to go into the previews yet, but there's something in the preview for the next episode that has the same 8-pointed reference. But I won't talk about that yet.
I'm Googling the 8-pointed. Is there a sun or star? And there is the Star of Asinus. Let's see what
else.
But
it was in Rapunzel, right, Deborah? It was the sun.
Yeah.
Virginia's sun.
Let me go with Tangled sun.
Tangled. There you go.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
this was the Rapunzel episode. Tangled, having that. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see Tangled, Father?
Yes, I have. Yeah.
Okay, so when she's always painting, and when she goes and lays down on the bed and she looks up and she has painted that sun image, it's the same repetitive pattern.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's a 7-pointed sun in the Tangled image.
Cool. Okay, well, this one was 8 because we stopped and counted.
Okay. Well, I'm just looking at the, you know, yeah. But anyway. Huh.
And was it the symbol of the kingdom or something? Or?
Yeah, it was. You haven't seen Tangled. Okay. So when Rapunzel was born.
I thought I saw it. Perhaps I didn't finish it. I have it on Blu-ray.
It's time for us to start working on our Secrets of Disney. So when Rapunzel was born, like, she had a mobile over her crib, and it was suns.
Yeah. Okay.
And it was the, not 8-pointed, but the 7-pointed sun.
Mm-hmm.
And so when she was kidnapped, as a baby, then as she grew older, she started doing a lot of sketching and drawing and painting and all that. And then when she realizes she's the lost princess, she sees that she's drawn all of these 7-pointed suns everywhere in the castle.
Okay.
So so it's kind of like, it is kind of a symbol. And the flower that they look for at the beginning of the movie to cure her mother is like a sunflower. It's like a...
Right, so I'm wondering, was that symbolism in the set before? I'd have to go back and look. Or was that new? Because that was we noticed it was both there.
The only thing he opened the door and we saw all the, you know, the pentagrams, or not pentagrams, that's not the right word. The octagrams, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, oh, that looks like the sun catcher that was in Neil's apartment.
Yes.
When he was in New York City.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that I can relate that to.
I'm Googling an 8-pointed star, and it's a symbol that you see in a lot of religions and cultures, and it takes on different meanings, but it's usually a symbol of divinity or a deity or something like that. Kind of makes sense because it's the sun, the source of light. So But anyway, I'm not sure if that's if whether that will really play a role or it's just ornamentation. I don't know. But speaking of that first scene, what is now crystal clear to me is that they are setting up the whole story arc of David not wanting to fail the next one, because that's what Emma tells him before she's sucked into the portal, is like, don't fail the next one, don't fail the next one. And this entire episode, of course, he wants to be the father who will not fail the next one, and he wants to be there for his second child. And what does the Wicked Witch take away? The courage to do that, to do so. So you can totally see that he is going to appear to fail the next one as well, and to lose his second child just like he lost Emma. And that's going to be his big story arc. So, wow.
It's basically she's trying to break him for whatever reason. You know, maybe she sees his courage, but she's trying to break him. First to see if she can break him by conjuring up this deepest fear and having that be his undoing. But then that doesn't work, but she gets the courage. And so, I don't know. She's trying like heck to get everybody broken in some way.
I was thinking she just wanted the courage. And so she had to force him into that fear situation with the Night Root in order to get the courage.
So, okay. So the, does she know about the Rapunzel's story then from,
Now, the Rapunzel story was, I thought, an element just to show us that he was familiar with Night Root. So that gold, I mean, she couldn't just go into Gold's shop and steal the Night Root and then use it, and we'd be like, oh, look, some magical element Gold had. No, they used the flashback. If you noticed, this episode was like 75% storybook and maybe 25% Enchanted Forest. Very little Enchanted Forest. I felt like the Enchanted Forest Rapunzel story was only written to introduce and show us that they've dealt with Night Root before, that it's something that came from their land. It just felt almost like it was tacked on just for that purpose of filler, so to speak, to keep the story moving.
But I thought it was very clever how they took that story, that fairy tale, which is actually a very short fairy tale, and turned it into a symbol of overcoming your fears. And the tower actually being the embodiment of what fear does to you. It separates you from your future. And she's locked up. And I thought it was a very smart moment to introduce that story.
Yes, I did like that part of it. So now, when he said, I noticed your tiara, did anybody else stop for even a second and think the Princess and the Frog?
Oh.
Tiana. She looked, the actress is so beautiful. She looks like Tiana. Huh.
Yes, she does.
And then he says, are you a princess? And she says she's Rapunzel. But it was just, he said, I notice your tiara. And I'm thinking, tiara? Wasn't tiara the name of the, no, wait, no, that's not right.
Tiana. Tiana.
Yes.
Wow.
Change the R and pull it down to an N.
I would not be surprised if somehow the story of the Princess and the Frog is going to pop up either this season or in the future. But they must. I mean, it's a difficult story to use because the Disney movie basically extrapolated everything they could from the original story and then added like 90% complete fiction to it, which is not part of the original fairy tale. So I'm not sure if that would work in the context of Once Upon a Time, but yeah, there needs to be a frog that turns into a prince at one moment. I mean, it would be a shame not to have that story. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I was going to say kind of along the same line of talking about their fears. We had that in a little bit of every character in this episode because, you know, Zelina met with Snow and she talked about her, Mary Margaret. Henry is talking with Regina about getting, you know, small town and how it might be nice to have more than two place settings. It's not a fear so much, but it's a longing.
A longing, yes.
And then there's Hook and Emma and they get into the banter. You know, here I thought you weren't afraid of anything. You know, what have you been doing for the last year on that ship, you know?
And she knows that he's lying, so he's not telling something very important. That's also established here, and we'll probably need there's more to Hook's presence there and why he returned and why he gave Emma her memory back Is it just for Emma? Is it because he's still in love with her? Is there
Hook
something
never
else?
Does anything just for somebody else purely. It's always some motive
it's got to be an interest.
Well, there's also he's a little bit Jack Sparrow. Mm-hmm. And Jack Sparrow never does anything just out of kindness. There's always something in it for him. So there's something in it for Hook as well.
Absolutely. Exactly. And that, you know what? Maybe he's the one that broke the lock. Because he goes back. He's with Emma when they find the storm cellar. She pulls out her gun. She's all ready to go storm down in there.
But wasn't Hook
the one that stops her.
But wasn't Hook all the time with Emma afterwards? After they...
David's the only one that was not with them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you're right. Okay.
But he tells her,
she says, are you scared? He says, hey, love, there's a difference between fear and strategy. I think we need some magical backup here.
Could it be that actually he did not want Emma to enter the cellar because he's in cahoots with Neil? Again, where is Neil? And did he... I'm trying to think.
We haven't seen any of Neil in the Enchanted Forest either.
No, but I keep feeling that it was Neil who broke the lock, and that that there must be something going on between Hook and Neil.
Neil did want to go back to see his father's manor and see if there was some blood spell there that he could use to bring his father back.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe Hook helped Neil with that. Maybe eventually, Hook left and maybe Neil went out on his own because we haven't seen him in the castle yet.
Hmm.
So maybe there's a whole, that's what's got me all excited about the season. There's all these questions and they're just like,
there are a lot of mysteries, yes.
Let's go find out. So,
Maybe it's more about Hook is more concerned about keeping Neil away from Emma so that he has a chance still. I think he's still harboring that crush on Emma.
Yes, that certainly. But, what is his... Is that the only interest? Is that enough for Hook? Or is there something else that they're not telling us? Mm. I don't know.
Hook's always been pretty motivated by his heart.
Mm-hmm.
Could it be his heart that is gone? I don't know.
I thought about that. I thought maybe Hook is the Tin Man.
Mm-hmm.
Because, maybe he doesn't have a heart. I mean, think about it. The one true love he had was killed by Rumpel. And then he's, kind of had this, unrequited love for Emma.
Mm-hmm.
And, so he's still... maybe he's doesn't have a heart.
What I'm thinking, trying to connect all the dots. We know that the actress who plays Snow is truly pregnant. She is on the verge of giving birth. And so she might not be available for the entire run of the season. So what if they need to get out of Storybrooke at one point and make sure that she's not part of the group that carries on the story? Could that mean that she stays behind and, like what you suggested, Deborah, her child is being abducted by the Wicked Witch to Oz, and then three characters, the Lion, the Tin Man, and the Scarecrow, are the ones who actually go after the Wicked Witch and the child.
You need Dorothy and the Good Witch. So we're talking Henry and
Regina.
Because Henry has to be a part of this. He's always
true.
A part of this.
So it's Henry, Regina, I'm pretty sure Emma.
And
Rumpel.
Rumpel. And
David.
And David. And then, probably Hook.
Maybe
Hook's Toto.
I don't know.
That's terrible.
Who knows? But, that makes sense. That would allow them to go to... it would mean also a lot of green screen sets, so I'm not sure if I'm too happy with that. But it would enable them to give... what's her name? The actress who plays Snow. I forgot.
Mm. Oh, Jenny...
Goodwin.
Isn't it Jenny,
Goodwin
or
yeah,
something
you're
like that?
Right.
Or
Goodwin. Yeah, Goodwin. Yeah. So they could actually give her some time off if that is what they decide to do. Hmm. I don't know. The story definitely needs more Henry as well. I mean, he was such a pivotal character in the first two seasons, and now he's all but gone. I'm not sure if that's because of school or whatever is going on in the life of the actor, but I do think that this season would miss something if he wasn't involved a little bit more heavily in the story later on. There was this another tiny thing that I really thought was funny. It's the trope of you put something in someone's tea or wine or whatever, and then you're just waiting for him to drink it or her.
Yeah.
And then it's constantly interrupted. It's like, come on, drink it already.
I was wondering if he was not going to drink it, and that would be yeah. the... But then, yeah, he did.
There's always a Disney movie with that. Like, Emperor's New Groove has that, and mm-hmm. where they put something in his drink, and it's like, Emperor needs his drink. So, yeah.
And then I need to mention this, because we're approaching the end of our episode. I need to mention this huge Star Wars reference. I mean, I always try to find Star Wars references, because now that Star Wars is owned by Disney, why not? But the entire concept of facing this hooded character that is actually the embodiment of your fear, and even the connection with Roots, that is so totally, entirely Empire Strikes Back. Think mm-hmm. of Luke Skywalker's training on Dagobah. And at one point, you know, he has learned a lot. He's grown stronger. But there is a very important moment in his education. And Yoda sends him into this tree. He has to enter through the roots of the tree in darkness. And he enters this surreal world where you don't know if it's a dream or a nightmare or a reality or a mix. And what does he encounter there? His greatest fear. Darth Vader, a cloaked, hooded enemy.
Turns out to be him.
Yeah, there's a lightsaber fight, just like we have a sword fight here. And he kills the other, you know, the Darth Vader. The mask rolls off and to reveal Luke Skywalker's face. And it's just him actually having, you know, faced his greatest fear. And the biggest obstacle in his life is not Darth Vader. It's his own fear. It's himself holding back. And, I mean, highly symbolic. And this was, for me, so obviously in the way they filmed it and the way they kind of told the story, a clear, very clear reference to that.
Search your feelings.
Yes.
Hey, can I just mention a couple things that I was
yes.
like, and this is like the whole Easter egg thing, because I paused on the first, you know, nightmare sequence
mm-hmm.
A couple times to look at the shelves. And there, when you were talking about Mary Poppins, mm-hmm. You know, the blocks that were on top of the shelf
yeah.
could have been an Easter egg Mary Poppins thing.
Why?
Oh, yeah.
The building blocks.
Yeah, the building blocks. And then there was a Bambi, a really scary looking Bambi up there. And some, you know, African animals and some penguins and all that can be, you know. If you're really a Disney fan, that's like, oh, hey, it's the Lion King. So
it was just when when I saw her and she was in that outfit where she's talking to Mary Margaret. And I just thought, oh, she's dressed up like Mary Poppins. And then when I started really thinking about it and looking for it, you know, I looked up Mary Poppins. I'm like, well, no, that doesn't look right. Maybe it's, you know, the Margaret Hamilton after we saw the bicycle. I said, oh, she's of course it's Margaret Hamilton. And I looked that one up and I'm like, well, there's only 10 years difference in the costuming. And, well, 10 years in two continents, in a continent, an ocean in between. But
mm-hmm.
I wonder if it's supposed to, if they're doing this on purpose with the costumes or if I'm just a nerd.
I don't know.
Think they're doing it on purpose.
I think so, too.
Yeah, there's got to be. Disney doesn't just make costumes. Because if it weren't on, she'd be dressed differently.
What if this whole, you know, identity that she has in Storybrooke how would you call it? A midwife?
A midwife, yeah.
What if that has something to do with who she was previously in her, you know, miserable life? Perhaps we will see a backstory where she turns out to be a kind of a Mary Poppins-like, you know, archetype or whatever.
Are we going to do a spoiler at the end before we go?
Probably, but let's first make sure that we have nothing else to say. Okay. Well, there was a very short reference at the top of the tower by David, where it was, cut it away, let it go. And of course, thousands of children all over the planet started to immediately to sing, let it go, let it go.
I have not seen the movie yet, and I can sing the song.
What? Oh my gosh, you haven't seen the movie?
Movie is
no,
fantastic.
My older daughter went with one friend, and my younger daughter went with my husband, and I haven't seen it yet. And if Lisa, I'm glad Lisa's not here now, because she would be.
It's out on DVD. It's out on Blu-ray. Get it.
I know, everybody else has it. I don't want it. I tried to buy it
last week, and it was sold out at the, you know.
I think it's one of the biggest Disney hits in the past 10 decades. I don't know. It's crazy.
Lisa got hers a day early. She had pre-ordered it from Amazon. She got it the day before the release.
Oh, it's so good.
Well, I will try and make it a point to borrow it from her. So
do that. You won't regret it. It's really good.
Get that song out of my head.
Oh, it's terrible. And I don't even like the song, and it's still in my head.
We're going to have to talk about that in a different podcast.
I talked about it on the break several times. Nobody understands it. I just think it's a song that will feel very dated in a few years from now.
You know what it sounds like? Since, you know, this is a total tangent, but since we're talking about The Wizard of Oz, it's, you could almost replace that with the song from Wicked. Oh, what is the song?
It's the same actress.
It's the same actress.
Exactly. Yeah, it's
Defying Gravity.
Yeah.
So it's like the very similar song, very similar style, very similar.
Yep.
Message.
Yep.
So it's almost the same song.
I mean, like those four or five movies that were all written by the same songwriters, Little Mermaid and Beauty and the Beast. And,
Alan Menken.
No. It's a new pair of writers.
But they're all, you know, they kind of get the same pattern going.
Oh, yeah. They definitely made sure that they connect to that tradition, but it's.
Oh, speaking of music, how did this show open? Did you notice they played the Evil Queen's theme music?
Oh, did they?
Bum 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 bum.
Cool.
Right in the very beginning, when Charming comes into the nursery, it opens with the Evil Queen's music. I don't think we've heard it since the first season.
Wow.
It was just, sorry.
Well, it's of course because the nightmare is referring to the consequences of her curse. So that kind of makes sense. Yeah, you're right. There is a question that David asked us via email. David has lost his voice, a poor man. I hope he will feel better soon. So he was unable to join us on the call. He writes, I would like to toss in one question that I was puzzling about after the ending of the episode. Why was there a spinning wheel in the cage where Rumpelstiltskin was being kept? I mean, sure, it was a great way to tip off the other characters that Rumpel was back, but why would the Wicked Witch need more gold in the first place? What would she even need gold for? Any ideas?
Well, maybe...
We talked about it in the beginning of the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
The straw for the symbolism of the scarecrow.
Yes, I mean, it's definitely symbolism, but why?
The gold for maybe a brick or something.
Oh, no, my thought is that there's still
magic
in that. Make
bricks out of straw.
You know, there's still magic in there. Maybe there's something to do with the magic that it takes to spin it.
Could it be that she needs gold to form a yellow brick road to get back to Oz?
It could
just
be a portal.
Conjecture.
Bricks out of straw.
Mm-hmm.
Why not? I mean, there's got to be something with gold. I mean, gold, Mr. Gold, gold, the gold, the yellow, golden road. I don't know. We'll discover that. I'm puzzled by it too. So I think that's about it. Oh, one last thing I noticed. When they discover the spinning wheel in the cage, there is this shot of everyone who's there in the storm cellar. And everybody looks shocked, except for Regina. And she is like confidently smiling. Does she know something that we don't know? What's going on there? Why is she like...
Maybe she was kind of like, I knew he wasn't dead.
Could it be that she's also involved in the whole, you know, freeing Rumpel? I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, we are now going to venture very briefly into spoiler territory. So I want to thank our listeners who don't like to know anything about the next episode for listening. Go over to our website if you want to, onceuponatime.sqpn.com, to subscribe to the show if you happen to find this by accident. And you can also find all the previous episodes and future ones, of course, in the future, mind you. And if you have some time and you want to help us find more listeners for this show, we would really appreciate your feedback and your star rating, preferably 5 stars, or a review on iTunes, because that is still a great way to share your enthusiasm about Once Upon a Time with like-minded listeners. So we appreciate it. We love doing this show, as you can imagine, and we love sharing it with you. But by sharing your review and your thoughts about our show, you can do something back. So we thank you in advance for your time. And now, time for spoilers. Do they have to do something with the trailer for the next episode, or is it unrelated?
It was the trailer.
Okay, let me play the sound of the trailer first, the promo.
I summon thee, Dark One.
Never make a powerful woman mad.
Show yourself, you winged freak.
Because payback can be a real witch.
Oops.
New Once Upon a Time, next Sunday at 8, 7 Central on ABC. And see full episodes anytime on Watch ABC and ABC On Demand.
Okay, that is the freakiest music I've ever heard in a trailer for Once Upon a Time.
We'll not be buying the soundtrack to season 3.
No.
Neil!
Mm-hmm.
Neil is back. What is Neil doing?
Yeah.
He's not a winged monkey.
No, he's not.
Who's breaking? Why is he breaking into Gold's shop? Why are Belle and Hook, you know, barricading themselves? What's going on? And did you see the Aztec calendar? The sun in the middle with 8 symbols around it?
Oh.
And 8 creatures emerging out of it. Now, I landed on
this
by accident. I was pausing, right? Just to see little things. I was just start, stop, start, stop. And when it stopped on that. And my daughters, who are in World Geo right now, in 6th and 9th grade, said, "It's an Aztec calendar." I said, "What? What are you talking about?" "It's an Aztec calendar, the sun in the middle, the symbols around it." So I spent a little bit of time Googling Aztec calendars. And, well, they have a different set of numbers. And this one is 8. We counted. And there are 8 creatures emerging out from around it. And I want to say we've seen that before, that was in the Enchanted Forest when Regina cast the spell the first time. I have to go back and look at my DVD set. Clearly, this is a pattern. This is something going on in here. I found a quote from a book called Memory of Fire, Genesis, by Eduardo Galeano. And it's talking about different suns in the Aztec history. And it says, the fourth sun, the wind sun, was wiped out by storm. People turned into monkeys and spread throughout the hills.
Oh, really?
Oh, wow.
Now, I am not as well read as the writers of the show, and they've been preparing for this for, 10 years? But you cannot tell me that people turning into winged monkeys, an Aztec calendar, and then this reference that I found by Googling, I admit, did not come, that there's no connection. There's got to be something, and I hope they reveal it.
Wow. This is pretty cool.
Okay. I'm done. Thank you.
So there's definitely there was more to this whole sun thing. And you kept it a secret for the entire episode. Kudos to you.
Yeah. It has something to do with the creation story, the creation myth. But it had, like, you know, the first sun, the watery sun, was carried off by flood, and all that lived in the world became fish. The second sun was devoured by tigers. The third was demolished by a fiery rain that set people ablaze. The fourth sun, the wind sun, was wiped out by storm. People turned into monkeys and spread throughout the hills. And all I could see were those, you know, him turning into the monkey, the winged monkey. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a vet. I'm a doctor. Dang it, Hook, Spock. I mean, whoever you are.
Fascinating. Well, this is the kind of stuff I think that we were actually yearning for This season, like, give us more mysteries, give us more questions, stuff to speculate about, symbolism. I think we actually got more than I realized while watching the episode. But thanks to your both of you and your commentary, wow! I'm more impressed. I'm gonna give this one an 8 out of 10 instead of a 7. Good job, writers. How many episodes do we still have? Is there a lot of time to go to? This is like episode 13 or 14.
Usually, there's 18 episodes, right?
Okay.
That's what I was thinking. I want to say they said we go 12 weeks. So if that's true, then we have 8 to go.
Let's see. Let me just see what the season 3.
We're all
3.
Madly using the computer.
Yeah, yeah. Technology.
I'm looking at an episode guide here. On TV.com, usually they have an overview of whatever is still coming up. So the next episode is called Quiet Minds.
And one of them is called It's Not Easy Being Green.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
That's the one after this one. And then Jolly Roger bleeding through Kira's. There are technically...
Jolly Roger's going to give us...
21 episodes.
Yeah. So we have 7 to go?
Kansas. Did you see that?
No. Mm-hmm. And that number 21's not named yet, at least not on IMDb.
Awesome. Oh. But how cool is that? It's not easy being green and then us having that discussion about, huh, she looks really like Princess and Frog Princess.
Kansas. They're going to go to Kansas so that they can get caught up in a tornado and have it. They're going to find out a tornado is a portal and it's going to whisk them away.
Yeah, why not? And
it's
in order to go after the Wicked Witch and to go to Oz, the only way they know how to get there is through a tornado.
Mm-hmm.
That is definitely what's going to happen.
And Deborah, you're in the Midwest. You grew up in the Midwest too. You know, May is like the height of tornadoes.
Oh, yeah.
It's like,
totally.
Oh my gosh.
Lots of things to forward to.
I only live 30 miles from Kansas, so yeah, I'm totally right there.
Well, we will be happy to be back next week with another episode of Secrets of Once Upon a Time. Thank you, Shelley. Thank you, Deborah, for being here. And we will join you next week with... more stories, more speculation, more theories. Thanks for listening, and take care.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.